Following segment is a paid commercial program by Christensen PLLP. It's time for Ask the Expert on News Talk 1340 KWLM.
And we welcome into our studios a partner with Christensen PLLP. Joel Gratz is here today. Joel, good to see you.
Hey, good to see you. How was your Easter, Bill?
Good. It wasn't as nice if you can be with family, which I wasn't. But other than that, everything went fine. The roads were a lot better than they were early Saturday morning for people that had to travel. And Sounds like the metro got considerably more snow and perhaps even northern Minnesota. I don't know what you had at your place, but I would say I had between 2 and maybe 3 inches.
Yeah,
but,
that's what I would say. You know, a lot of it kind of blew into the spots you don't want it to with that wind that came out of the northwest. But
yeah, the wind was pretty ferocious there for a while, and it sounds like we could get a reprise of that again coming up tonight, and then maybe even more so tomorrow is when the wind is supposed to kick up again. So.
Yeah, what does that mean, Bill? Does that mean a late, extra late spring, or what does that mean?
It's sure beginning to look that way, doesn't it? What in your memory now, what is about the latest, can you remember, getting in the fields to actually do anything?
My memory would be probably that the end of that first week of May would probably be, I think, what I would determine the first or the latest where you start turning the wheels and stuff, I guess. What's your thoughts?
Well, I was thinking that too, perhaps. I remember, of course, this is ancient history now, but we hardly ever planted any corn until maybe the 8th of May or so,
I agree. We never planted corn in April, ever.
And it was a lot of the tractors, especially the guys with the planters, didn't like a cab on it because it restricted their vision.
The view,
So they would be out there in these heavy, heavy coats.
And ear flapper hats.
You had to fill the fertilizer and the planter boxes by hand back in those days. And, it'd be plenty cold to refill the planter, too. So
yeah, well, truth be told, Bill, I still do that, too, by hand. I help my dad, and that's my job is to move seed bags and whatnot, so...
Well, and that seed is pretty valuable, so you hate to put it in the ground too early.
It is, and you hate to drop a bag, too. So you got to be really careful at that.
And we've been hearing now, too, you got to be sure to cover it up if you do spill any. They say the DNR is really trying to minimize, I guess, because the stuff is probably not the best for wildlife with all the treatments that's on it right now. So
Did you happen to listen to Q102 this morning and your friends referencing your memory, I think is what they were referencing. Did you
really
hear that?
Wait, which memory was it?
Well, it was just how good your memory is. I don't want to bust anybody if you didn't listen, but Dan and Kelly were talking about Bill Dean and his memory in relation to a turtle. I don't know if you heard that or not, that turtles live long and apparently remember things. So they referenced you, Bill. So good. I think that was a compliment.
And they move fairly slowly or deliberately, too. So that would definitely describe me. So.
Well, I don't know. I'm just here to say that they were talking about the winter and how long it was, and we should ask Bill Dean because he's got one of those memories that would know exactly when it was.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little down today on the records because we've been trying to transfer what used to be paper records over to a computer, and I just had completed April and May, and now they're gone today. So it's time to start over on those again, it looks like. But trying to, and we're using, whatever the state climatology office has as far as all-time records. But sounds like we'll be flirting with an all-time record low tomorrow morning, or by Wednesday morning, rather.
It's got to be. It's chilly.
So anyway, the other pleasant topic today is taxes, and you'll be happy to know I actually got mine prepared last week. So
I'm impressed.
I'm already done before April. So
yeah, it's real hot in the kitchen right now at the office. A lot of folks, people think, well, you must be almost done. I tell you, I don't think we can see the end yet, and got a lot of the heavy hitters to come through here, and these aren't the refund people usually, of course, because they want to wait if you owe, as most business owners maybe do at times. They usually wait till, I wouldn't say the very end, but it's going to be busy right up to the very end, I think. April 17th, if people haven't heard, because the 15th falls on a Sunday, and April 16th is the Emancipation Day in D.C., so we cannot end on a national holiday. So we're on the 17th, and I'm not I don't want my clients to wait two extra days, but I know I'll need those two extra days.
Right.
So very good.
And you can be filing these extensions, right? You know, as long as if there is money due that you send a check with that, if you anticipate that they're going to have to pay in. Is that
yeah,
correct?
That's a great point. You can extend the filing of the tax return, but you cannot extend the payment. So if you have done a rough estimate and you're going to owe some money, you better drop a check in the mail with the extension. Otherwise, you're going to have some late payment penalties and interest charges. Yes.
And what was that? Because now if they find out that you have overpaid, or if you do file an amended form and it proves that you actually are owed some money, now they actually pay you some interest on that.
They do pay you interest back to the point of when it was due, which would be April 17th this year. But that would be right. There'd be some interest that would
come. Is that
back.
About the same then? Is it either way what they would pay if you've overpaid or if you've underpaid? Then
yes.
That would be the same.
Yeah, it's generally a wash. Yeah, it would be probably... What's the word? Unconstitutional to charge us more and pay us less. But
the banks do it, right? It's okay for them. That's
apparently it's okay for those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to make sure we were on the
same page.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you wanted to talk about IRS audits, and I know this is something I've heard on the news and also read myself that because of staffing, and that they're actually going to be physically unable to do as many audits as they may have done. But of course, I don't know if that necessarily means, you know, if somebody's doing something inappropriately or perhaps that isn't above board, you know, chances are they could still get audited, I'm guessing.
Oh, there's always a chance. And I think the stat that just came out maybe in the last 2 weeks was 0.8% of all returns were, I want to say individual returns, were selected for audits. So an audit can be a very broad term. And I believe when they reference that percentage, that's a full-blown, you visit with the auditor live kind of situation. So that's pretty rare. And that's why I wanted to, you know, not that I'm expecting any or many audits because of that. I also don't want to say, well, because there's less staff, we should just let her, you know, let's go wide open on this and do any kind of deduction we want. That's not what we want to do either, of course. But there's a lot of things that when you go to the mailbox and you see a letter from the IRS or the Department of Revenue here in Minnesota, I guarantee you many of my clients, it's a terrible thing. Mm-hmm. They immediately get, you know, concerned, worried. What's going to happen? Am I going to jail? You know, the whole joke kind of thing. And then, so today I wanted to make sure everybody knows, one, that it's not the end of the world. And two, it happens. I mean, it's in today's software-driven, data-driven world, I would say out of the box, probably 90% of what I would call, you know, questions or letters, I would not even call an audit, but they are questioning an item, meaning there was a mismatch, you know, in the software. They were reported that you had this much interest income, but you only reported that much. Mm. And so we try very hard in our office to make sure our clients bring in all of their 1099s and things they received from other people or that was reported to the government, because I want to make sure I at least eliminate the mismatch. You know, I want to make the IRS earn it, if you will, and not just have a stumble upon something issue to save that letter when you go to the mailbox kind of deal.
What about simple math mistakes? Do they correct those automatically then if they're, you know, looking through your form, and, you know, and will they notify you then that you maybe owe another whatever it might be?
The only thing where it'd be a math situation where they might just automatically correct is if your payments were different, meaning if I set up my tax return, I put in my quarterly estimates at $2,500 a quarter for $10,000 total, and they show, our records show, you only sent in $9,750, they're going to change that automatically and then tell us and say, by the way, we did change your refund. Here's why. Mm-hmm. And then you have a chance to respond and say, well, that isn't right, or okay, that was right. Here's another check for another $250. So I think that would be, in my opinion, the only thing they would change automatically. If there's a mismatch, meaning, or if it's an error, where I, you know, fat keyed in or fat fingered a number in, then they wouldn't change it. They'd say, hey, this is what we got. Why did you send this? And it's really a question as to, if you disagree, you've got 30 days to respond, provide the documentation, meaning this is why we put it in. Or if it was in fact wrong, they give you a little envelope and an address and you can send it along with your check.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's pretty harmless, but it's still scary. you know, when people aren't used to getting those in the mail. And I ask that you, anything that looks IRS, anything that looks, you know, Department of Revenue, please keep it and open it immediately. Don't throw it in the next year's tax file. It should be looked at right away and should be addressed because there's usually a window on that time where you have to respond.
Okay, so that's very good advice. And then contact, you know, you or whoever, you know, the
your CPA should be contacted immediately. Yeah. And in the world of scams, too, that's another thing that's been really running wild. I want the listeners to know that if you are going to be questioned or audited, they never call you. They're not going to get your cell number. They're not going to get your home number. They do not have that information on file, for one. And two, they're not going to call you. By statute, they have to document and lay out what they are questioning and why and give you a time frame to respond. That is by statute that they need to do that. But a lot of people get nervous and when they get those prank, not saying a prank call, scam call, and say, you're being audited, you owe us $1,000, send money here. You know, some of our population are more vulnerable to that. Maybe the elderly have, they get really nervous and get, you know, apprehensive and they just go ahead and send money. And that's definitely a no-no, and they never do it that way. Even after you are in an audit process, you have to go pretty far before you're actually either face-to-face or voice-to-voice with an auditor. So it, that's something that also, if today, if they could take away, you know, do not assume that when you get a phone call or an email or a text, that is definitely not official business.
And there's some really suspicious-looking mail you can get, too, that looks almost official, but there's something that isn't quite, you know, not necessarily just on taxes either, but on other, whether it's Social Security or are you getting the most out of Medicare or whatever it might be. You know, there's all these different scams out there that are going on. And
which is upsetting, right? Mm-hmm. Can't they find something better to do?
Well, you know? It must pay off for them. That's all I can think.
I know. It does, unfortunately. But in our country, you know, you just figure you could lock everything down, but you can't. So, yeah, just beware of these scams and make sure you don't get suckered into one of those deals.
Yeah. Because every year we hear about something from whether it's the sheriff or the Better Business Bureau or the Secretary of State or different people that investigate these things. Seems like we always there's something that pops up every so often that. So now what we've kind of covered a little bit what you can do, you know, contact your CPA. And then how do you guys go to work then on behalf of the taxpayer if they are under an audit?
Well, again, on that paper deal where they're just questioning a number or two, generally there's a box on the 1040 that says, I allow my preparer to discuss certain items on my tax return. So I can very easily write a letter and usually have the documentation from when I did the tax return and send a letter in, and then the response goes back saying, oh, yep, sorry, we agree with your response, or you know, if we did make a mistake, you know, then I'll tell the client and they send money, you know, to do that kind of stuff. If it ends up being what I call a full-blown audit, where they actually send a list of documents and dates upon which they either want to meet or want to come out to your home, if you will, or your business, we often recommend as a strategy to do it off campus, meaning don't invite them to your home so they can walk by and see deductions or look at your farm buildings or look at your equipment. Specifically, you know, contact your CPA, and we usually get power of attorney where we say we will handle these matters for the client. We remove the client from it for two reasons. One, it's an emotional thing. It can be scary. And we don't want people to say things that may incriminate them, even though they do not have any reason to be feeling guilty. Try to eliminate them from that and make it a more, you know, less stressful event for them. So two, I can basically only report statutorily what is required. You know, we try not to give the IRS any more information than what they request and let them dig into it if they need to. Not that we're always very forthright. We believe, and our firm believes in working with the auditor and the IRS and trying to be forthright. But there's a line where, you know, if you don't ask, we're not going to give it to you. You know, this isn't about making deals at that point. You know, it's about, you know, I'll give you what you want. I may ask you why you need that, and they are supposed to provide me an answer to that. So we handle those back and forth conversations to make sure Again, that the IRS is only getting what they need, and it's, you know, we're not making it any easier or incriminating if there is something else, which, again, when I say that, I'm not assuming all my clients have dirty laundry in the basket. It's more, hey, let's just do it right. Let's do it statutorily right. Let's cross our T's, dot our I's, you know, obviously it does cost more money for a client when they get audited. You know, that isn't included in my tax prep fee. This is additional work, but that's the way it is. And if you do it right, 99 out of 100 times, it should work out to the advantage of the client, taxpayer, to hire their CPA to handle it. Very few people are savvy enough to handle it and calm enough to handle it on their own. So we usually, like I said, get power of attorney, have the auditor, if they need a site visit, actually come out to our office. We've got all the original documents that they asked for it, receipts, et cetera, bank statements, whatever, and work with them directly right at our office. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a standard procedure if it gets to that level. And again, that's that 0.8% that we talked about. So it's pretty rare that it would happen. But when it does, it's business. I mean, you got to be serious about it and be very careful about it. And they always seem to find something. You know, they kind of sift through the sand and try to find, you know, the fly wings out of the dust, you know. So they always seem to find things. And often I get asked, well, what would cause me to be audited? What would be the issue? And more than likely, the software kicks something out that said you've been at, you know, for farmers, as an example, they have a national database, and if repairs and maintenance is this percent of your revenue, okay, that's normal. And if you jump out of that normal, they might just question you on that one item. Hey, send me your repairs and maintenance. Why is it so much higher? Show me your documents to prove it. And they dive into that. You know, so it ends up being a data-driven deal. And if someone gets kicked out, my understanding is, when I say kicked out of the software, it goes to a different spot, and then a live person, not necessarily an auditor, but some data technician, whatever, will look at it and say, okay, I can see this just by looking at the entire return and the complexity of it, not just that one line. And that might just keep on going through and it'll be just fine.
Right.
Or they say, whoa, yeah, we do have an issue here. This is goofy. I don't think this is right, or we should check into it. Goes to a separate pile, and then the letter gets kicked out, and then we start doing the audit process. So that's kind of the background. And again, I don't know for 100% fact how this works, but that's what I've been told and kind of what I've seen in the process.
Right. About how many audits do you deal with on, like, even an annual basis? Then it can't be too many, I wouldn't think.
No, I would say in our office, a full-blown audit, we might have one a year, you know. And again, I'm not bragging to that. It's just, you know, we try really hard, and probably our clients aren't in risky industries, maybe, perhaps. And we're in West Central Minnesota. We're out here in the country where a lot of the auditors are located in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and they're going to probably spend most of their time there because the population is there, for one. And two, they don't do a lot of traveling anymore. You know, we used to have local IRS auditors here in Wilmer, and we had St. Cloud, and we no longer have that. So it's a unique situation. Again, not meaning we should throw all the cards on the table and just run wild. You know, that's not it. But you just... we just have less audits, and I would say maybe one a year at the most. As far as the paper ones go, you know, we've probably got, you know, we've got 3,000, you know, returns to go through. We maybe have 100 mm-hmm. where we got some paper matches or mismatches, you know. And
and sometimes it just can be a forgotten.
Absolutely.
You know, yep. when you have multiple 1099s and all these other different forms, you know, it's an honest mistake. Well, they lost one, or the bank didn't send one, or whatever it might be, but the IRS got their copy, and there you go. So it's
things happen. You know, it's just the way it is. I wish I could be 100% accurate myself all the time. I make mistakes sometimes. So, I mean, it just happens. It's just, we got to be cool about it. Keep your head. And turn it over to us, and we'll handle it professionally, and we'll get it taken care of for you.
One last thing, too, Joel, and you see these ads every so often. Say you've got you owe the IRS money.
Mm-hmm.
You see these all the time, and say it's $25,000, and it might be from years ago even.
Yeah.
And you've got these people that are running ads saying they can get that down to $5,000 or whatever. All you have to do is contact them. Is that legitimate?
It is legitimate. It's unfortunate that they're advertising it that it's something that they do. Mm-hmm. And they often, when they charge these people that I see on these ads, I see them too, and I want to throw a rock at the TV when I see it. But when I explain to my wife that it's not that easy necessarily, and I think it's kind of dirty that they charge how much they can get, you know, you lessen your tax bill.
Right. Yep.
The bottom line is there is a very structured process, Bill, to doing that, and it's called offer and compromise with the IRS. It's
okay.
It's a formula based upon your assets and a questionnaire that you provide. It's really math orientated for the most part. I mean, there's certainly negotiations at times, and I've negotiated a few in my time. But 90% of those people, they get into a bad spot, and that happens. The offer and compromise is something that you shouldn't, one, be embarrassed about. Two, it's statutorily available. Three, it's simple math. If you don't have assets to do it, you can't. It's physically impossible, and the IRS agrees, and they acquiesce. And if it, you know, a $10,000 bill on your assets in this formula, say you should be able to pay $1,000, it's $1,000, and it's done, and the rest gets forgiven. So it's definitely, when you see the advertisements, that is an option. But it's not because of anything, I would say, uniquely special that these attorneys or consultants or CPAs are really beefing up in their marketing, you know, to get your attention. Not that a good CPA, a good attorney can't, you know, do it better than maybe you by yourself. But it may not be worth all those fees that you might have to give up, because I've seen as high as 50 or 60% of that debt relief goes right back to the CPA or to the or to the attorney or whoever. So it makes you feel dirty when you're a CPA on this side going, that's just not, I don't feel right doing it that way. It's a service, not a, hey, you know, a percent of your collection, you know. So it's things that, it's definitely legit though, Bill. You know,
yeah.
It's definitely legit.
It seems like law firms that I've heard of even that will run ads like that occasionally. And
yeah. Yeah. And again, I'm not tearing down any attorneys or CPAs out there who do it like that through the marketing. But it is a very structured process. Mm-hmm. It is available. It's there for a reason. Not that you can go to the well every year on an offer and compromise. That's kind of one of those deals where you get into a corner, you got nowhere to go. That's where we suggest to go. Mm-hmm. And it's, I've seen things work beautifully in my office, where there's truly either a medical issue or something happens and there's just nothing. I mean, there is no assets. They got in trouble, and they walk away and they can sleep again at night because they got this thing figured out. So that's the offering compromise. That's great you brought that up, Bill. That's it's a unique opportunity that is available.
Yeah, I often wondered about it. And you mentioned, is it like, I mean, there is a period of time, too. You can only go back so far, I'm guessing.
Well, the three-year statute of limitations is always there as far as what year. But we try to say, if you know you're going to be upside down on something, the sooner you can reach out to them, the better. You know, sometimes playing offense is better than defense, you know, and that kind of deal.
All right. If people have questions at all and would like to get more information about a CPA and perhaps, you know, not only taxes and audits, but all sorts of just with business, better business records and planning and so forth, Joel, how do they reach the agency?
Yeah, just give us a call at 320-235-5937 or visit our website, ChristensenCPA.com, and we'll get you hooked up with the expert.
All right. And then you'll also promise spring weather one of these days.
I would rather promise paying no taxes than the weather, so I hope it comes around.
Thank you, Joel.